Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Unlike a lot of radio and TV personalities, David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation, only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. And now, brace yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, here comes the unfiltered truth about money, investing, and retirement planning from a man who will give it to you straight. No bias and no spin. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. We've got lots to share, so we're going to get right to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Mr. Connor, how are you?
Hi, David.
Well, what was the trade all about?
Wednesday's trade was pretty gruesome from start to finish. It was a lot worse in the middle than it was at the end. But
hey, you've got your glasses on. You usually wear contacts, so it.
I don't even own contacts.
No, I thought I've seen you wear contacts before. No. Oh, I know what it is. You have the darker black ones.
Yeah,
that you
those
wear.
Are at home.
Okay, all
those
right.
are at home. But really, not a whole lot of happy news, with one exception on Wednesday's trade. But looking at the major index, the Dow down 161, S&P down 19, NASDAQ down 33, so a rough day all around for equities. Tens all the way down to 162 on tens.
So what is that? All the money coming out of Europe and going into treasuries?
Well, going into treasuries, going into the dollar, 123 on the euro, next technical support at 118. That matched the 2010 summer low. So a lot of money going into the dollar, a lot of money going into German bunds, a two-year German note, 0.007 yield.
What's their 10-year, around 1.3?
Yeah, right in that range.
Okay.
Yeah, gold up a little bit today on what I think was either a short cover or a technical trade, at up 15 at 1566. Facebook, have to give you your Facebook update.
Oh, I'm dying to know.
It continues to sell off at 2786. That's a 25% drop over the course of basically 2 weeks.
And off 40% from their top of $45 after
that's
they
right.
did the IPO.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, nothing good there. The U.S. antitrust regulators have announced that they're going to look into the Instagram purchase that we talked about. Remember, they just kind of went away one weekend, and Zuckerberg said, "Hey, I'm going to take $1 billion out of the cash count and buy this Instagram thing. It allows us to shoot pictures around, basically."
It's going from bad to worse.
Yeah, so the antitrust regulators are like, that doesn't seem right.
Here's a question everybody wants to know, Scott. Okay, is there a price at which you would buy Facebook for our portfolios?
I mean, it's hard to analyze with shrinking revenues. I don't know that you want to buy a company that has shrinking revenues. If they see some solidification of revenues and they're able to monetize the handhelds, then yeah. But I mean, the way the business model is right now, if you had to look at a price-to-earnings ratio, you'd probably look at $13,
yeah.
$14 in there somewhere. That's
okay.
A long way to go between now and
so
then.
So I'll take that as a no. Not yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch it. I mean, even for my money, I wouldn't touch it. I'm more...
There's a lot of risks there.
Yeah, I'm more willing to take risk with my money than I would client money. I wouldn't... there's no way I would touch it with client money.
Okay.
Not for a long, long, long time. Eurozone, they're saying now that they want to have a banking union, basically, rather than Spain going to the Spanish government and saying, hey, we need a bailout. They want to have all the countries combined to make a banking union so they can circumvent it. Because it doesn't make sense for a Spanish bank to ask the Spanish government, hey, I'm broke. I know you're broke too, but can you help me out? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So they're trying to form a union, which may lead to euro bonds. Which would be interesting.
I'm sure the Germans are excited as they can be about that.
Yeah, they've got to be thrilled about it. I mean, you know, they are being punished for their responsibility, no question about that. On the economic front, just a little teeny bit of information before Wednesday's trade, but it wasn't good. Pending home sales dropped 5.5% in April. That's a four-month low.
But prices went up a little bit?
Depending on where you were.
Okay.
They did in Florida, but
well,
by and large,
news.
The Case-Shiller Index, which we got on Tuesday, was not positive, except for certain pockets, Tampa and Miami being the notable two of those. In further economic news, really what we're looking for the remainder of the week is Friday's non-farm
That's
payroll.
That's when you get all your big numbers.
Yeah, the estimate is 150,000 new jobs created, unemployment number probably still at 8.1. I'm looking more for 128, something like that.
But we need 400,000 or 500,000 a month, though, just to dig out, right?
Yeah, I don't think we'll hit 150. Remember, we were 115 or so last month. So I don't think we'll see anything big there. CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, was in the press a fair amount on Wednesday. They're talking a lot about the TV, and the thought is that Apple can revolutionize television the way they revolutionized phones, mobile phones. But it's been very, very, very gossamer as far as what their actual plans are, what it's going to look like, what it can do, what it can't do, who provides the content. So folks who are looking for an immediate impact from Apple TV are likely to be disappointed. And on the other side of the handheld phone trade is Research in Motion. More trouble for them. The makers of BlackBerry said that basically, hey, when we announce our earnings, folks, you're not going to like them, so hold on to your hat. And in the meantime, we are starting to talk to law firms and venture capital firms and maybe see if we can find somebody to sort of just buy us. I don't know who would want them, but...
I don't know. Maybe Zuckerberg might decide to pull another billion in cash. And
yeah, he could. And there is talk about that. But I mean, that's a huge shift. And I think to me, that makes Facebook even less attractive. You don't want them to become basically a technology conglomerate where they're, you know, masters of nothing. You know, I think they should focus on the business at hand and monetize 900 million users. If you can't monetize that, you don't need to be branching out into new business.
What kind of revenue numbers they have right now?
Oh, I don't know exactly what they are. I know they're shrinking.
Yeah. Well, they need to do something. All right.
Yep. So that's where we are. Overseas, last thing I want to tell you, Italy has a 10-year yield over 6%.
Uh-oh.
Spanish 10-year yields are getting nearer and nearer 7%.
They were at like 6.7 last time I looked.
Yeah, so that 7% is really sort of the psychological level where they really have to start to look at putting their hands out a little bit more aggressively. So we'll see what happens with that.
Well, you know, you mentioned Spain, you mentioned Italy. If you go right down the international stock indices from our friends at Wall Street Journal, Spain's year to date, this is just, so we got 5 months in, their stock market's off 27% in 5 months.
Yeah, I think that really shows a lot of, we have been talking about decoupling, and the S&P at this point is still positive for the year in the 5% range or so. So we definitely are seeing a separation of direction for a handful of the world's markets.
Well, yeah, it's us and all the emerging tigers that are doing well. Or better.
Yeah, better. Let's not worry about well.
We won't say well.
The Dow over the last month is down 6% for the month of May. Never did have 2 days in a row of positive returns. So hopefully we can reverse that trend. I'm hopeful that this is 2012's version of September 2011.
Let's
just be done with it and rebuild the base and go forward.
All right. We'll rebuild the base and move forward.
All right.
Thank you, Scott.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us. We'll take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. And of course, I continue to tease you with my special guests on the program, but it's fun and I like doing that. This is kind of a neat show today. I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball. I met a gentleman at a recent reception and we got to talking and hit it off well, I think, and got to talking about money and politics and finances and taxation. And so I have for you on the program today, Ed Connor.
Hello, David.
Welcome, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I'm glad to have you on.
Well, thanks very much. I was pleased at our meeting at the fundraiser that your head didn't explode about 10 minutes into the conversation.
I met Ed at a fundraiser reception for Linda Costello, who is running for Volusia County School Board.
School Board, right.
And enjoyed meeting you there. And of course, also we know Fred Costello as well. And you've done a lot to support Fred. Of course, we've had Fred on the program. And Fred's my dentist. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Oh, is that right?
So if a guy's put his hand in your mouth, I probably can.
Well, he's giving you a pretty good smile.
Yeah, so thank you. I can afford to agree with him. But anyway, so I wanted to have Ed come on because one of the things that Ed and I talked about that was really interesting to me, and I confessed to Ed before we started the program today that the truth is I really never have given fair tax as a policy initiative for raising revenue for our government to fund all the various things we need to fund and pay for. I've never really given it a quote-unquote fair shake. And so I thought it might be very interesting for our listeners for us to talk a little bit about it, because I'll bet you a lot of you out there listening have really only heard bits and pieces about fair tax and what it's all about. And so Ed, being a big supporter, and you told me before we started, you've spent 10 years trying to find something wrong with the fair tax initiative, and you're still coming up short, which means you think pretty highly of it.
Well, I think in order to understand an idea like the fair tax, it's important to go back to its origins, which occurred in Houston, Texas around the early 90s. And a group of businessmen, very successful guys who were on the boards of several major corporations, were sitting around one of the country clubs there and reminiscing about their careers, and the subject of taxes kept coming up. And one of them commented that, you know, I spent 80% of my time on those boards discussing tax implications of the choices that the companies made, and that just seemed a little odd to him. And so they decided to put their own money in. This wasn't a grand conspiracy or anything, just a bunch of good old boys who had been lucky in life's lottery and decided to take a man from Mars approach toward taxes. And they sat down and said, what would a man from Mars decide was the best way of raising revenue without damaging an economy? If you came down out of the sky and didn't have any political inclinations one way or another, or no preconceived notions, and could design the ideal system, what are the basic fundamentals of a sustainable tax system that doesn't damage the economy? And they decided that there were three or four basic principles. One was fairness. If people don't think the system is fair, they're going to cheat. They're going to be resentful or cheat or just not follow the rules. The other is transparency. It's important for everybody to know when their taxes are going up and why. And the third was simplicity. Now, I tried to apply those three principles to our present tax code. And I thought, at that time, the tax code was 60,000 pages long. Today, it's 70,000. So simplicity is not one of its characteristics. Transparency doesn't really fit the bill either, because when Reagan revamped the tax code in 1986, he basically went to a flat tax, had two rates, but he eliminated a lot of exemptions, but greatly simplified the tax code, and as a result had a pretty good economic run after 1986. Unfortunately, because of lobbying in Washington, the tax reform that he accomplished in 1986 has been amended basically twice a week for 20 years. And now we have a 70,000-page tax code that virtually no one understands. If you submit a tax return to 10 different companies, you're going to get 10 different results.
Well, there's the joke that, you know, even if you call the IRS and ask a question, they say, well, we're going to give the answer, but you can't rely on it. Now, we're gonna need to take a break in just a second, but
sure.
I skipped over because of my enthusiasm to get into some of our conversation. Give a quick snapshot of what brought you to, you know, your background, what brought you to being involved with the fair tax and wanting to help people understand it.
Well, I was an independent contractor for a number of years in my career, and it wasn't always smooth sailing. The road to success was not a straight line, and but then neither is the road to failure.
So true.
I went pretty much through the same process that Leo Lindbeck and his friends in Houston went through in the early 90s. When I read the book, I thought, wow, this makes so much sense. There must be something wrong with it. So I started looking for what was wrong with it. And I'm still looking.
All right. Well, we'll keep talking and looking after we take a quick break. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
All right, we are back, and I'm joined in the studio today by Ed Connor. And you're involved with the Fair Tax. This isn't just something you do casually. You're involved pretty formally with this.
Well, I'm on the board of directors of the Florida Fair Tax Educational Association, and we have a lot of events going on around the state. The Florida Fair Tax is one of the better organized groups in the country, although it's a nationwide effort, and there are several states that are trying to adapt features of the fair tax because the national plan requires a lot of political will. And we think that the time is right now with all the disarray in the tax code and the...
Well, and also a lot of the uncertainty.
The businesses here are just flummoxed. Japan has now lowered its tax rate, so we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world, and that's not where you want to be. You don't want to be. You want to be in first place among education standards, not among tax levels. So the fair tax just addresses right down the line.
Let's get right to everything. That. What is the fair tax? For people that don't know what it is, they hear a very distorted view of it, maybe of from some of the media. So what is the fair tax?
The fair tax is a national consumption tax on every new good or service. It does not tax business to business. So if you're a lawyer who advises corporate clients, there's no tax involved in that service. If you're if you sell used houses, there's no tax on used products.
So it's new stuff.
It's new stuff. And the beauty and simplicity of it is it's revenue neutral, raises the same amount of money as we raise now. I want to say one thing right up front about what it is not. It is not a control device that tells you how to keep the size of government under control. If you want smaller government, that's a separate issue. I happen to believe personally that we need about half the size of government we have now because we can't afford what we have. But the fair tax doesn't address that. The fair tax says, okay, let's save that argument for the
whatever politicians. It is, we got to fund it though.
But if we want a revenue neutral system, the fair tax gets rid of the income tax on both personal and corporate level, gets rid of the alternative minimum tax. It gets rid of the payroll taxes, all payroll taxes, gets rid of the death tax, inheritance tax, and replaces all of these with a one simple national sales tax. And that number at present would be about 23%.
Okay.
If you want a smaller government, which I think we need, that number might come down to 12 cents. But
We probably would have to have a transitional period where we use that higher number, hopefully, to pay down the debt. And that's a huge drain on our economy. And
it's estimated that we spend $500 billion a year complying with our 70,000-page tax code. It's so horribly inefficient. It contributes nothing to our economy. It's a drain on our resources. It forces multinational companies to keep money outside the country. I got a quick story for you. I worked in Dubai for 2 years in 99 and 2000. And when I first got there in late 98, I was sitting at a big table in a Lebanese restaurant with 15 or 20 different nationalities and typical Middle Eastern din going on everywhere. And I hollered across the table at one of my friends, Kenny, where can I find a tax attorney here in Dubai? And the whole table went silent. And I felt like I'd forgot to put my pants on or something. And Kenny turns and looks at me, and everyone's looking at me. And Kenny says, well, Ed, why would you need a tax attorney? No one in Dubai pays any taxes. And I realized at that point that he was right. Americans are the only people who are taxed on their overseas income. Some Canadians, and most of the other Americans that I met there were with oil companies that were employed out of American business centers like Houston and oil companies, and had their taxes taken out back there, so they didn't worry about overseas income. But as far as being an expat contractor, independent contractor, nobody else worried about taxes, so there weren't any tax attorneys in Dubai.
That's amazing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ed, I want to talk about the big elephant in the room, or donkey in the room, depending on the way you want to look at it, is politically, is it surmountable or not? Can we get something like this to start to take shape for how we fund our government? Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
All right, if you're just joining us, I have a special guest that is a new friend of mine, Ed Connor, local resident of Volusia County. And you also, Ed, you talk about not just about fair tax, and you are, I think on your, I found Ed's LinkedIn page and he described himself, which I love this, independent public policy professional. That's, aren't we all? You told me when I met you at Linda Costello's event for her running for Volusia County School Board that you, I asked you, mentioned to you about the political nature of a lot of things that we had talked about, including the fair tax. And I said, you know, the folks that run in politics and who choose to be in leadership and take these official positions, the personal stuff they deal with, you know. And you said to me, you know what, David, when you open your eyes in the morning, you're in politics. And I agree with you. So talk a minute about the political aspect of this fair tax. I think a lot of people say, yeah, it makes sense, especially if it's not, you know, going to punish the people that have less and in a regressive way. Talk about those two things, about the impact on people that have less, the poor, and also on the political realities.
I those are both good points. I have to confess, I was rather taken aback when I saw the enthusiasm of the pushback. Because I thought, what are they defending? A 70,000-page tax code that no one understands? $500 billion of wasted compliance costs every year? What's to defend? We have a horribly inefficient tax system at all levels. Now, this is just dealing with a federal tax, but there are also several states that are looking at incorporating aspects of consumption taxes to replace things like property tax. Surprisingly, it might surprise most. It surprised me. I know it would surprise a lot of people. Is property tax is a very small portion of most cities' income. It wouldn't be hard to replace, and it's a very unfair tax.
Well, and it is definitely something that affects the saleability or the values of the homes.
Absolutely. That's another issue, and I didn't mean to interject that.
That's
because
okay. We'll have to do that another day.
property tax is a local tax, yeah. So it isn't impacted by the fair tax. But the fair tax takes all levels of federal taxation out of the equation. Now, the important part to remember is, first of all, the poor are not impacted. No one up to the poverty level pays any fair tax on any
of their... They get what do you call a prebate, right?
They get what they call a prebate, and for a family of four with two parents, family of four, making the minimum poverty level wage, they would get a check from the government for about $658 a month.
They would use that to supplement and their purchases.
They would use that to pay the tax on everything that they buy, all the necessities of life.
So they would pay no tax.
So they'd basically pay no tax. They're off the tax rolls. The other thing is the people are not aware. When they go down and buy a bottle of water today, about 22% of the cost of that bottle of water is what we call embedded taxes. Mm-hmm. It's the taxes, the people who manufacture the plastic, the people who ship the water to the store, the people that pay their employees.
Payroll tax.
Payroll taxes.
Healthcare. Everything's in there.
Everything's in there. It's 22%. So when you say there's a 23% fair tax, oh, that's going to bump the cost of everything. Not really. Once a transition is made and those taxes are removed, the cost of that bottle of water comes down by just about the same amount as the fair tax. It might be mildly inflationary, but that would be far more than made up for by the stimulus to the economy that would occur. And the biggest stimulus would be corporations that have huge amounts of money overseas now. People aren't aware these corporations are penalized. Somebody like Apple Computer, they're penalized if they bring their overseas money back into this country, 35% right off the top. Fair tax would eliminate that.
Well, and I think the other thing that I was thinking about as I was looking at some of the material before you got on the program is What about the risk? You know, one of the things that obviously we're trying to address here also is those that are out, that are the underground economy and people that don't pay tax, the people that are here illegally that aren't paying tax. Is there a risk that you do this? And there are, you always have to be careful what you get as an outcome, as a byproduct. Is there a risk that there will be folks that say, well, you know what? Okay, then we're going to create these big barter exchanges or something where we don't have to have an actual sale and purchase.
The clearest example I saw of the that made me feel comfortable about that issue was something like 80% of the sales taxes presently collected by the state of Florida are big box companies, the Lowe's, the Home Depot's, the Target's. Those companies are not going to take a risk of tax fraud by agreeing to sell you something without the fair tax.
So that's where the compliance comes in. They're already doing it, right?
80% is just, there's no question they're going to comply because it's simple and it's illegal not to.
Okay.
So, you're going to get far more noncompliance with our present system of mishmash than you are with a fair tax. And that comes back to simplicity and transparency.
I like that.
You have a transparent code. People can't cheat. And with a fair tax, with a consumption tax, it takes two people to cheat, the payer and the receiver.
Good point. We're going to take a quick break, Ed. Fascinating stuff. Stay right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
All right, we're back. And if you're just joining us, you've missed a very interesting program. I have Ed Connor. And again, I love your LinkedIn title, Ed. Where is it? Independent public policy professional. You have done a lot of work as an independent contractor. You've been a businessman. That's what you've done. And now you're here, you're local, and you are helping us understand the fair tax. And you're going to come back on another show and we'll talk about property taxes.
I'm sort of an overaged retired Mitt Romney.
Okay, well, you look pretty good for that. So here's the question, speaking of politics, is the fair tax politically viable? You know, I think we all understand that, you know, part of the reason why people oppose it is because they don't want to lose the power over the ability to play games with the tax code.
As we talked about, there are two reasons most politicians oppose tax reform. One is they don't understand it and they don't want to have to defend it in a public forum where they aren't sure of the details. The other is they do understand it and it removes their power.
Well, and there's one more, third one for you, which is the third rail, which is that they can't tell you who to blame and what's wrong and play this whole hate them, they're the problem, that whole game of politics that's played all the time.
The fair tax was introduced first to Congress in 1999. It's had between 60 and 80 co-sponsors every session of Congress since then. Our own Congressman John Mica is a co-sponsor. Sandy Adams is a co-sponsor. Andrew Crenshaw is a co-sponsor. Most of Central Florida is very well organized and behind it.
So this is a plank that somebody would quote unquote run on or be part of what they say they're going to do.
Sure. The idea of taking power out of the hands of the politicians, the power to manipulate the tax code and pick winners and losers and favorites and people that aren't favorites, it's pretty corrupt when you look at where the money goes and where it flows. And in the present administration, we're seeing money flowing to unions.
Well, there's an old saying, and I know you've heard it, follow the money. You always follow the money. Why does somebody do what they do? Why does somebody, you know, somebody prescribe a procedure that's not necessary? Why does somebody do something they shouldn't do? Follow the money.
That's right. And once again, we come back to transparency.
Well, we will have to save, and I want to have you come back, Ed. We're going to talk about transparency at the county level, talk about taxes. We've had Ed Connor on the program today. Ed, thank you for being with me.
My pleasure, David. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned for the next show.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.